Welcome to the Not Just a Pony Ride podcast, presented to you by Hetra University. If you've landed here, you're probably passionate about how horses help people. This podcast is for anyone who helps others experience the benefits of horses or those who have experienced it themselves. If you're in the equine assisted services industry, we're here to help you. If you're here just to learn more, you're in the right place. Welcome to your community of like-minded people, where you will hear stories, education, science, and explanations about how what we do is so much more than just a pony ride. And now, from the Hetra campus in Gretna, Nebraska, here's your host, occupational therapist and CTRI, Katie Ott.
I have a hot episode today. The highly requested topic, the highly sought after thoughts on preparing for the canter. So this episode has some great perspectives because I have Shelby Schult, who is a CTRI and Hetra's program manager. She was our previous equine operations manager, so you might have heard her on the show before in that hat. But I also have Italia Rouse of Royalty Training, and she is a professional trainer here in the Omaha area. So between the two of them, they have tons of horse experience that they're going to share. And it's unique because Shelby is going to share with us the really adaptive riding, CTRI, equine assisted services side of this. And then Tally's gonna break down how she looks at it from a professional lens with her trainees, her horses that are in training with her, as well as the riders that she has that train with her. So you're really gonna get a well-rounded episode today and some really cool perspectives. You're also gonna hear a little bit about Hetra's cantering checklist. So we use that to really be sure we have all of our boxes checked on skills that our participants are really ready before they lope off into their dreams. So listen in to hear about our checklist and then how you can get your hands on it. So we are going to share that cantering checklist with you. So tune in to hear how you can do that. Okay, I'm not going to make you wait any longer. Here's the episode. Enjoy. Thank you for joining me, both of you. I know you are busy horse people, so I appreciate you sitting down with me. Today, I have Shelby and Tally. They're going to tell us a little bit about yourselves, what your kind of credentials are, and who you are in the horse world.
My name is Shelby Schult. I am the program manager at Hetra in Nebraska. I'm also a PATH certified CTRI and ESMHL.
Hi, I'm Italia Rouse, and I go by Tally. And I'm a professional horse trainer here in Omaha, Nebraska. I have been professional for the last 4 years, but have ridden and owned horses since I could walk. And so that's my credentials.
Very good. Well, thank you for joining us. So we kind of have a couple different hats on this episode, and it's an important episode that I think a lot of people have questions about, and that is cantering. Okay, so preparing our participants, preparing our students, people we're training for the canter or the lope. So let's first talk about what is the canter, what is the lope, what does that look like?
So I think for a lot of us that function in the EAS world, the canter or the lope is a little bit of an elusive creature because we don't have very many participants that probably are riding at that type of level. So I think it's something that a lot of instructors and a lot of centers are less comfortable with than they would be, say, a walk trot lesson. So for us in the EAS world, I think it's a little bit of an elusive creature. So hopefully everybody listening to this episode knows what the canter or the lope is. It's a 3-beat gait that a horse performs. It's faster than a trot, slower than a gallop. It's a little bit different to ride because it has a little bit more of a rocking motion, whereas a trot is a little bit more of a bumpy or a posting motion. So from an EAS standpoint, that's kind of what we view as a canter. Tally can comment on from a training standpoint.
Yeah, from the outside, just regular horse riding world, it's funny that you say that because it is also pretty elusive. I get lots of clients, people, riders that come to me and are terrified of the canter or just never canter or it's just this thing that is could be considered the most advanced speed. I mean, it's not the most advanced exercise, but it is the fastest, and it's where people lose balance and get uncomfortable. So outside, I mean, in the normal riding world, it's pretty elusive. I mean, people will go their whole lives riding and try to avoid cantering as much as they can. So,
well, and I think like Tally said, even with, you know, public riders or typical riders, it's something that people can go a long time and not ever get comfortable doing. And I think we all know anybody that's riding a horse, their emotions and the way they're carrying themselves is going to impact the way that horse is performing. Mm-hmm. And so if we have anybody that's riding that is maybe a little bit anxious about moving into that canter, we know that's going to make our horse more anxious, and it can just kind of turn into this downward spiral really fast. And then it feeds into that fear of cantering even more than we had when we first got on our horse.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Cantering is one of those things that like you have to do and just do it and get relaxed at it. But that part where you like actually get prepared for it, like that first time you lope off, is a huge step for a lot of people. And I think really hard to teach, because how do we know that people are ready to lope off before they actually do it? You're like, whoa, that went wrong really fast. Or that went really well. So how do we troubleshoot, like, seeing if people are prepared?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a tough question.
Right. I mean, that's a box of, you know.
Because I give lessons as well as training horses. But when I'm giving lessons, especially children who are just beginning to learn riding and just getting used to it, you go through the progress of walk, trot, and then when they're ready, loping. Mm-hmm. And I tell the kids, and you can tell them a million times over and over, it's going to be different. We can practice and practice at the trot as much as we can. But when they go into that lope off, that first kind of, they almost do a slip.
Yeah, that lift.
lift into it. It's almost like some of the kids think they're jumping, which they're not, but it's just a little hop into it. I mean, you see the fear immediately of like, it. Again, we can't simulate that in the trot or the walk. It just is what it is. And you can't get to it until you're there. And so there is, like you said, sometimes we have to test it and come back and say, all right, we weren't ready for that. But it's just something you have to see and be there and do it to understand what it is.
Mm-hmm. So I think I have two things to add to what Tally said, and I want to say them both because I don't want you to let me forget. So I think a big piece of this is obviously building the skills, like Tally said, and sometimes we have to do it. We have to have them go off into a lope and see where the holes are and where we're going to have to come back, and we have to fill the holes and build the foundation. But I also think a really big piece is having the right horse, because having a horse that is confident and comfortable in a canter, that can get into a canter and appropriate speed, and then can maintain that without accelerating or breaking 15 times around one lap of the arena or falling down under that really quick trot, is going to be really that person can't get used to the rhythm of the canter and sit that and feel it, or even two point it and feel it, if the horse can't hold it and maintain it. So I think horse selection into this kind of a lesson is huge, huge, huge,
for sure.
I think that speaks volumes, especially. So I grew up on ranch horses. Horses, you point them and go and tell them what to do, and they do it. They have a job and they're very good at it. So when I came to Hetra and started testing for my CTRI, we went through and kind of learned, like, you know, which, you know, lead you're on in your canter and all of that kind of stuff. And I remember really struggling with a horse that was going to take me for my word, right? So like, if I wasn't super committed to that, you know, canter, it was very forward, then he was like, oh, I'm not going to do it. And so he would break gate. And so for me to learn my leads and all that stuff, fancy stuff I needed to learn, was hard, because he was also reading what I was, my unsure in this, right? So I think that speaks volumes. I mean, having the correct horse.
And that type of education of leads, of setting them up for the lope departures, getting them in the correct mindset and frame, and getting yourself in the correct seat and frame. most people don't learn that or don't know that. They just think squeeze, smooch, and the horse will go. Mm-hmm. And so that is another huge branch of it, of you and the horse have to be on the same page and have to be ready for it. Because I find people will come to me for lessons and they've been riding horses their whole life. You know, I've had this horse for 10 years. I've had, you know, all this stuff. And then I say, okay, let's just see a lope. And they just squeeze and the horse throws whatever lead works. Mm-hmm. And the rider stiffens up because it's the wrong lead. And they just bounce against each other. Yeah. It just becomes like a little scary looking and a little rough. And so that, again, that same thing of the rider and the horse have to be on the same page. And again, in the beginning, like Shelby said, having the correct horse so mm-hmm. the human can learn that is a huge part of all of that.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's something for EAS programs that is hard because we don't do a whole lot of loping in our programs. So at least for us at HETRA, having a point smooch kiss lope is not a requirement to be a mm-hmm. horse here.
Right.
So not all of our horses are going to be appropriate for people to learn to lope on. And does that mean that we don't have some of our higher level riders that can lope on them, or our horse team can lope on them? The horse is not incapable of loping with a qualified rider, but they're not going to be the appropriate horse for people to learn on. So I think for us as in the EAS world, that rider horse match is really important. I think Tally, your side of it may be even harder because you have people coming to you with horses that are theirs that they own. And maybe the horse doesn't have the credentials and the person doesn't have the credentials. And so building that is really hard. So one thing that we have at HETRA is we call it our cantering checklist. And it's something that our riders who are progressing to a canter have to go through and they have to check all of these things. And we ask that they be checked off by basically a third party instructor. So it's not their normal instructor that checks them off. It's somebody else that comes in and looks at them and evaluates them, because I think a lot of our instructors and our riders, we get into a normal routine, right? And we go, okay, well, this rider has a challenge with XYZ. And so we make adaptations to help that rider get through whatever XYZ is. And we figure out how we're going to get that rider cantering with those adaptations. But the third party may come in and say, well, wait a second, we really need to go back and fill this hole. So that's kind of a checks and balance that we use at HETRA that's really successful. And then the other thing we really work hard on is making sure that the riders that are progressing into the canter have very strong skills and are very comfortable moving all of the parts of the horse. So not only can they ride at a walk trot and control that horse at a walk trot, but we ask them to be able to do things like a forehand turn, a shoulder in, a shoulder out, turn on the haunches. We practice a lot of different types of emergency stops so that when they do go into that canter, they have those pieces. It's not like, you know, they hopefully do not feel like once their horse is cantering, they have no ability to stop their horse. Mm-hmm. They hopefully have all of these skills that we've built to allow them to maintain control.
Right. That's, I always say to my people, if anytime you bump up speed, you are bumping up the difficulty.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have that control or that confidence even, you know, if you're nervous, anxious at the walk or at the trot, you're not going to have it at the lope. Right. And you're not going to be ready for the lope. So yeah. I totally agree with you there.
Yeah. And I have the cantering checklist that we use at HETRA in front of us. And so you guys know, listeners, it's a 15, there's 15 skills on our cantering checklist. And when the third party viewer looks at them, they rate them from working on it, almost ready, and then there's a completed correctly, and then the extra component to that is we want to see them complete that correctly at least 3 times. So we want to see some consistency in those skills, not just, you know, you got it once and the stars aligned and you got that, you know, half halt that one time. We want to see some consistency in those skills too.
Right. And I think one of the things, so at HETRA, as the riders are progressing towards the cantering checklist, we try to transition them onto the horse that they're going to canter on as they're working through the cantering checklist. So they have a lot of opportunity to have multiple lessons on the horse they're going to canter on before they're actually going to canter. The horses at HETRA that we do use in our cantering lessons are highly, highly, highly trained. And they're just overall, all of our horses are good, but these horses are just really, really good eggs. And so we ask that this be completed 3 times because The rider may ask for a forehand turn and do it completely incorrectly. But if my sweet good egg knows that's what they're asking for, he's just going to do it because that's what he thinks he's supposed to do, right? Yes. So we really ask that to see that correctly done three times so that we know it's not just the horse doing what they think they should do, that the rider actually knows that skill.
Right. Yeah. And I love hearing all of this because I think we're thinking very similarly and working very similarly. Because you have your horses that are there to teach and they're there to learn or to help students learn. And so they know, and they want to be good and they want to help. And so I may steal some of your things. Yeah. Like, let's make someone else watch this because I'm loving this. But they do the horse. I mean, a child can be, and I use children as an example, cause that's what I'm thinking of in my lessons. The children usually ask incorrectly. But the horse can see the idea.
I see where you're going with this.
I see the poles on the ground. Uh-huh. I know what the idea is, and they'll just do it. However, if I put them on a different horse or I change the environment, that may not be the same outcome. So I love the idea of doing it multiple times and doing it with, you know, maybe a different instructor or a different, of changing it up. Because, again, the horses want to help as much as they can. And we have to have those good eggs, those good horses, so that these riders can learn successfully without consequences.
Right.
Right.
And I like the way you phrase that. We have our horses that are teachers because we do. We all know we have those horses who come to us and they are the teachers. They know all the things. Their job is to teach the people the things, right? But then we have those horses who are maybe our intermediaries, our step ups, who they can do all of the things if they're asked correctly to do it.
But they're going to have a question mark at the end of right. their...
it's maybe more of a conversation about what's going to happen. And so I think those are... that I really like the way Kelly worded that mm-hmm. we have our horses that are teachers, because we do. Mm-hmm. We absolutely do.
I think an important part of that, too, is that at Hetra, we have a horse team that regularly schools our horses in the walk, trot, canter if those horses have that in their wheelhouse, so that they are constantly practicing that. And even if we only have... you know, a couple handfuls of riders that are riding at that level, our horses are always prepared for that should that, you know, be part of their lesson.
A big thing on the training side is people don't lope because they're nervous, they're unbalanced, they're unconfident. So their horse does not lope. Mm-hmm. The horse does not get used to loping with a saddle or with a rider. Of course, a horse is going to go lope if they're in a pasture, if they have open space, they're going to lope. But when we don't do it with the saddle or with the rider, or even if the horse is stalled all the time and very rarely gets to lope, you're only making it worse the longer and longer and longer it goes on like that. Mm-hmm. So I get a lot of people that are like, this is my horse. Me and him don't lope. We trail ride, we walk, we trot, maybe sometimes. I never ever lope him. But now I'm ready to lope, and it's been 10 years. Mm-hmm. And if you even ask that horse for lope, he's just going to say, I don't know what this is. Right. I don't even know what you... So it is important that with those horses, we kind of, whether it be on the ground with a different rider, with an instructor, they have to get that loping in somewhere so that when the rider is ready, they are also ready, because it's a huge thing for the horses as well.
Well, and I think like Tally said, the balance. So, you know, it's one thing for a horse to lope out in a pasture, but it's a whole nother thing, like you said, with the tack and the rider, because if that horse can't balance themselves underneath a tack and a rider, and then we put a beginner rider who we know is not going to be balanced, right. Now we have unbalanced and unbalanced. And in the EAS world, we know that that's just the whole thing just compounds on itself. Mm-hmm. So I think, like Tally said, having that horse be really comfortable with the canter, right. and like Katie said, at Hetra, the horse team that schools the horses, we do cantering with horses so that they are balanced, and that if we are ready for a rider to move to that, the horse is ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because everybody knows that when you start to learn the trot, or you start to learn any skill, really, you're going to be a little unbalanced until you figure it out. So if our horses aren't ready for that unbalanced weight, then it's not successful for anybody. So I thought we would just choose like a handful of the items from the cantering checklist, and we can kind of talk about it a little bit, why it's important to, towards, you know, getting ready for the canter. So let's talk about, which one do we want to do? How about being able to bend their horse around corners and ask for a bend when circling? Why is the bend important for learning how to canter?
on the training side, the bend is so, so, so important because you get a lot of horses that have never been asked to bend. And so they're very straight. Their head points somewhere to go and the body just follows behind. And as we know, when we're going for a lope off to grab that correct lead and to have them lift, like we're discussing, lifting into the correct lead with that front foot, you have to find that bend and find, you have to support their hind end, scoot it over, kind of get a bend in their rib cage a little bit so that when they go into that lope off, whichever direction you're headed, it's followed with the correct lead. So that again, when you're in it, you have the proper support, you have the proper balance of the rider, because anytime we pick up that incorrect lead, balance, everything gets a little wonky because the horse is getting a little wonky. So being able to have that body control just supports you in that lope and just shows that the horse and the rider is able to get up to that point correctly.
I'm going to piggyback on what Tally said, because everything she said is applicable to everything we do here at Hetra. The other thing that is important, I think, for beginner riders is here at Hetra, we have our arena is gigantic. And I think it's really important that the rider is able to control their horse and maintain a bend on a 20 meter or 50 meter circle and hold that circle through a trot, because I don't want my rider the first time they're cantering to go cantering all the way down 120 foot rail on a straightaway, right? Because we're going to have a problem. I want them to have that horse in a proper bend, be able to ask that horse into the lope, just like Tally said, supporting that horse's hind end, getting them into the correct lead, and maintain that bend on a circle in an environment where they're going to feel like they're controlled and that horse is going to be able to balance themselves and keep themselves on that bend.
Right. And like when I'm training a horse, so this isn't even, you know, a green or uncomfortable rider. This is me who I've been riding and training. And if I'm on a young one, a colt, anything like that, you do, you find anytime you open up the space, you give them a straight line, you're out in an open field. Anytime you widen their space, you find they kind of lose control. It's like a toddler in a candy store. Yeah, they're like, I'm not sure where to go. I'm not sure where to head. I'm not sure what speed I should pick up. And so things kind of go AWOL once you open up to a straight line. So having them in that bend, in that circle, it gives them a confined, comfortable space to work, get comfortable on whatever it is you're working on. Like for today, it would be the lope. Get them comfortable in this space. So when we widen it, we open up a door, we get a bigger circle, we let them go straight down a rail. They're more confident because they were taught in the smaller, more confident area, built up their confidence, and then we gave them the space and they can kind of think, okay, I have all this space. I don't know where to go. I don't know what speed to take, but I have my rider on my back who knows what to do and has shown me what to do. And so there's just, it builds that trust and it builds the horse's confidence as well.
And I think from a balance standpoint, going back to that whole balance concept. So if we have a horse on a, you know, a circle, or say we're on a 20 meter circle and we're working in a 20 meter circle, which is probably a little bit small for a lope, but we're working on the circle, the horse is bending and the horse is balancing on that circle. Anytime we allow that body to straighten out and then ask to go back to a bend, that's an increase in difficulty level, right? Both for the horse and for the rider, because what we're doing with our body and what we're asking the horse to do with their body is different. The balance is going to change anytime we go from a straight to a corner to a bend. So if we can start on that bend, then we can eliminate some of those factors to it.
Something new and exciting has come to the Not Just a Pony Ride brand. Introducing Patreon. Patreon is a subscription-based site in which we can share even more with our equine-assisted community. Join us for $5 and gain access to a ton of exciting perks. My favorite perk is probably the monthly networking call hosted by Hetra's CEO and COO. It's on the first Thursday of every month at noon. And the last few months we've done it, we have had people join us from all over the United States looking to share their struggles, success, and expertise in this field. A really cool way to connect. My second favorite perk is probably the free access to a CEU-eligible webinar every single month. That's a $10 webinar that you get for only $5 with your subscription, plus so much more like training documents, lesson plans, and a variety of other tips and tricks. It just makes sense. So don't try to recreate the wheel or spend hours looking for quality continuing education. Join us on Patreon now. The link is in the show notes below.
To do when I start some riders cantering, and you have to have the appropriate horse for this, is I like to start them on a lunge line.
Where I was just going to ask that. Do we ever start them on a lunge line?
Yes, where I have the instructor or volunteer, somebody is on a lunge line with the horse and the rider's on the horse. And I think that helps maintain that bend. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're not getting the bend from the lunge line, but it helps kind of contain that movement. Mm-hmm. And it also, I think, allows riders to feel like they don't have to be focusing on 5 million things, right? So we still want our riders to focus on controlling our horse because that's number one, safety important. Mm-hmm. But if they don't, that horse isn't going to run into the wall, right? Or run out the gate or, you know, do something wild. So I think that really eliminates some of that challenge with it too, is starting on a lunge line.
And my question too is that, do we always teach, you know, when we're getting ready to teach the canter, are we expecting that our riders understand leads and the correct leads right away? Or are we working on straight lines and maybe just working on that canter departure?
I don't, but I trust that my horses do. Okay. So when I'm teaching a canter, so if I'm teaching a person to canter for the first time, I don't necessarily expect that that person is going to know how to identify their leads and feel their leads when they're first going into the canter. Mm-hmm. But I am going to rely that my horse knows well enough and my horse is experienced enough that my horse is going to pick up the proper lead every time that that rider asks them to, especially if they're on a bend or on a lunge line. Mm-hmm. Because I think, just like you said, when you first canter the first time, you're just focusing on staying in the saddle, staying in the saddle and controlling your horse. So if you're learning on a horse that doesn't know the proper leads, it's going to make it way harder than it is if you are learning on a horse that knows the, you know, you can't feel the wrong lead if you don't even know what a canter feels
right.
And I have my students, I want them to understand and have the idea, which I think Shelby's on the same page of, I explain the leads and I explain, you know, how we get the right lead and we go through it all. I don't expect them to fully understand and to fully all of a sudden whip out a lead change or, you know, anything. Mm-hmm. Because again, same thing. You're not going to know it till you're in it. There are still days, you know, I'm distracted in my own brain and I'll be five strides in and I'm like, we're in the wrong lead.
Does this feel funny?
Yeah. And so there's still days where we all have that. So I don't expect a student who this is their first time loping to be like, that's the wrong lead. I can tell because of this.
Mm-hmm.
But I do expect them to understand what a lead is so that when, let's say we find, somehow we pick up the wrong lead or they cued incorrectly and the horse picked up the wrong lead, I can say, okay, bring him down. We're stopping. And this is why.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you feel that this was uncomfortable? Did you feel that this was weird? You should have. And it's because he had the wrong lead. So that then they can start to identify. Then they can start getting the idea. But yeah, we know it's very hard to expect them in those first couple lopes to say, you know, this, we're in the left lead. We're, you know, striding this far apart. It's a very advanced term. And it even takes experience and time to build that yourself. So,
well, and like Tally said, when we first got started, it doesn't matter how much you talk about, it's going to feel different. It's going to feel different. It's going to feel different. They're not going to be able to say, well, this feels funny because it all feels funny.
Right. And that was me. I'll be completely honest. I'll be the guinea pig here. So like, I would have considered myself like, I wouldn't say experienced rider or advanced by any means, but like, I had been riding a long time before I came here. I didn't even know like that there's a correct and incorrect lead, because on the ranch we ride in straight lines and we don't really think about that. And like you said, you're riding and you're like, this feels weird. So you just, I don't know, stop. And then hopefully it feels better the next time. And so then when I came here and started learning like on circles and leads and, you know, all this stuff, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah.
That makes sense. Common. I run into it a lot where people are like, oh, don't worry. I host clinics and let's say I'll have, you know, throughout the year, I'll do some easy clinics for beginners. I do some intermediate and I do some advanced. Always at those advanced clinics, I have a plan and we never get to it, because the people that sign themselves up for advanced, like let's say for an example, I say, we're going to work on flying lead changes. For anyone who doesn't know what that is, it's a very difficult task to achieve for horse and rider. So if I host a clinic for flying lead changes, our first warm up, I'll say, all right, everybody, let's lope your horse on the left lead on a loose rein. And I'll get, what's the left lead? Or my horse doesn't move on a loose rein. I have to have full contact at all times. And this is speaking Western, not English.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the times it's like, okay, we might not actually get to lead changes today, but we'll get to the idea of it and the basics of it. Because it is super common in the horse world where you just grow up in it. your grandpa, your mom, whoever taught you what they knew, mm-hmm. and you just go. And so I do lately in the horse world, clinicians and trainers and taking lessons has been so normalized and so mm-hmm. has grown so big. I love it because we're seeing less of it. It's still very common, but we're starting to, it's not shameful to get help. It's not shameful to go take a lesson. So it is getting better, but it is very common where people just don't know what they don't know.
Right? Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Let's break down another one. How about demonstrate the half halt effectively? Mm. Shelby, what's a half halt?
So a half halt is going to be a maneuver where we ask our horses to just kind of check themselves, mm-hmm. for lack of a better term. So we're going to ask them to it's not necessarily that we want them to slow their speed or change anything they're doing, but we're going to kind of do a check-in with them. So it might be a little kind of seesaw with your reins. It might be a little pickup with your inside rein. People do half halts differently across all kinds of different
disciplines. I'm sure the description of it is different for everybody.
But the basis of a half halt is that it's kind of a check-in with your horse. Like, hey, slow your roll. Let's check in together. Let's keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really if you're, trotting across a diagonal and you're going to get ready to change rein, you might do a little half halt, check in with your horse, change rein, and move on. It should be, in theory, a very
non-invasive.
That's what I'm looking for. Non-invasive. It should not interrupt your lesson. It should not interrupt your ride. It should be a very kind of subtle cue to kind of check in. Hey, here's what we're doing, and moving on.
Mm-hmm. And on the opposite, if you are half halting the whole time, you'll realize that when someone says, okay, half halt, and you say, oh, I've had their head this whole time.
Right,
start to realize that maybe you need to loosen those reins or relax on your horse a little bit. Because like you said, it should be just a check.
Yes.
Just a, hey, yes. What are you doing? How's it going?
Yes.
Yeah.
So half halt is important when, I think, for me, I'm thinking like using the half halt, like when I'm getting ready to lope off or I'm mm-hmm. getting ready to, do something like that, like checking in, like, hey, you with me? Yep. Here we go. We're going to do this.
Yep.
Is that kind of the premise behind it?
Yep. And I think it's very much, and teaching the half halt for most horses that are advanced enough that they're functioning in an effective canter, we'll call mm-hmm. it that, are going to be pretty in tune to half halts, and they're going to have some sort of a response and check their body. But I also think for people, if you see you have a rider who we're loping and doing just fine, but maybe now we're getting kind of fast and we're starting to lose control, mm-hmm. we can say, hey, let's do a half halt. And that sometimes is a check-in. We can all visualize in our head somebody loping along and just rocking with the motion and it's getting a lot more. And we can say, hey, half halt. That's kind of a check for our riders also to check their bodies. So sit yourself down, sit yourself back, collect yourself, collect your horse. And then we're moving on. Mm-hmm. So I think it's effective for horse and rider. It's just to kind of slow your roll, check yourself, okay, keep going.
Before you wreck yourself.
Exactly.
We all need those.
Exactly.
Okay, let's do one more and then we'll, I want to ask you guys another question. How about back a horse in a straight line and an L? Mm. Why do we have to know how to back? Because we're cantering.
So back in the L, I love to hear that. I used to compete a lot in what are called extreme trail challenges or obstacle challenges. Lots of people know them as cowboy challenges, where it is a mixture of a little bit of speed, but lots of different obstacles, opening gates, going over logs, going through water, lots of hard, challenging things that you have to have a calm, cool, collected horse on. And you would come across things thrown in there as well, like a back and L that also is testing your horsemanship,
mm-hmm.
because that's not quite going to spook a horse, just back in an L.
Mm-hmm.
But the horses that succeed in just bum rushing through obstacles, you go to back and L, and that's very hard for them. So I love to hear that you guys use back in an L, because it is, people think, like when we used to compete in those, they'd think, oh, I don't even have to practice that. That's so easy. Right. My horse backs all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put yourself in kind of like usually we'd use poles as a confined L a little bit. And you ask a horse to back and then take a corner on that back. And you start to realize how horse and rider sometimes do not have those signals together. They do mm-hmm. not have that preparation for that. and you'll see the hips just start swaying and panic, and like the rider is trying to look, and when they look, that pushes the horse the opposite way. Mm-hmm. So it's a trusting exercise, but it also shows that you have control of your horse, not only forward, but backwards. And mm-hmm. when I teach people the back, I always explain, how often in nature have you seen a Mustang back up?
Right.
If they're going to back up, they're just going to turn, follow their nose, and leap.
Turn, yeah.
Backing is very hard for a horse, and is only really something we use as we have domesticated them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're able to get your horse not only to back smoothly and just back straight in a line, but you're also able to control and kind of manipulate their body to back at an angle, at a circle, whatever it is, that's showing major control over your horse and your body as well.
And I think as we translate that, Tally did a really good job of explaining why that's important for horses. And I think as we translate that up to a rider, it's the same thing. It's managing that horse's body in a sequence of maneuvers that are unnatural, but are going to require a high level of skill. So we can back our horses in a straight line. So two of the other things we ask people to be able to do is to do a turn on the haunches and a turn on the forehand. Well, we're going to use those same steps and that same pattern to get a horse to move their hips around an L as we're backing, but that sequencing is going to be a lot quicker and it has to be a lot more smooth and efficient. So the backing of an L is going to really increase and bring awareness to the instructor of how effective is that rider communicating and using their aids for that horse. So if we can back the straight line, but then we get to the corner, and we are, you know, it's kind of choppy and we're moving around the corner, we know our aids are probably still not very effective. So we're not able to use the outside leg to move the hip, the inside leg to push the shoulder. We're not able to maneuver those reins in the way we need to make that transition really nice and smooth around the L, that we need to probably be working a little bit more on using those legs and those aids in sequencing patterns in motion that are going to be more applicable to the canter. So maybe we need to work on bringing that leg back to control the hip. So when we ask for the canter, right, we're going to bring that outside leg back. We're going to support that outside hind as we push that horse into the canter. But we also don't want that horse canted and swinging their hip inside as we go to that canter, right? So we have to use that inside leg to help keep that shoulder up. That goes back to the proper bend.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can't do those things and use our body at a very, very slow, controlled pace of backing and L, we're probably not ready to use those parts of our body and control that horse at a canter.
Right. I love all of that. And I think I love especially the, Tally, when you brought up about how horses don't, I mean, they don't particularly love to back up a lot, you know? So it's like, do you have the confidence as a rider to kind of be assertive and say, these are my cues. I know my cues. Your horse is trusting you that you know what you're doing and you can back that L effectively, because it's the same thing when you go to lope off. I mean, does your horse trust that you got this and you know where you're going? And it's kind of a mindset thing too for the horse and the rider, I think. Okay. So, there's a ton of other things on our cantering checklist, that are really helpful things. So if you're interested in the cantering checklist, it is going to be part of our Patreon subscription. So you can hear more about that in the commercial at the end of the episode. So if you want access to the checklist that we use, you can find it there. So before I let you guys go, I want to ask, so we always talk about like when you're instructing people, like what's the what, how, why. So we use that a lot in the equine assisted services field. It's like, what are you about to do? How are you going to do it and why? So like, someone's getting ready to depart the lope or the canter. I want to hear what you would say to your rider to help them with that first departure. Okay. Is that loaded, Shelby? Are you ready?
That's really loaded.
We might need to do a couple takes of this.
And I think it really depends on
what's going on.
Your environment, your rider, your horse, because each person is going to need me to say different things. So if I have somebody who is, They're really effective at maintaining a proper bend, but they maybe get themselves a little bit forward in their upper body, then my cue is going to say, okay, so remember we need to sit back on our pockets, pull our shoulders back. Mm-hmm. We're still going to maintain our proper bend. We're going to use that outside leg, bring it back, apply the pressure to the outside leg, kiss, keep your body sitting. Okay, we're cantering now. We're cantering. Okay, keep your body sitting, pulling your shoulders back, because as knowing a rider like that who wants to get forward on their shoulders, we're going to be about five steps in and they're going to be in the fetal position, right, like on their horse, trying to control their horse from the fetal position.
Because that's science.
Yes.
It's literally like so many studies have been done on it that like once your brain starts to feel any kind of uncomfortableness, immediately it's fetal position,
yes,
which is the opposite of what we want when, yes, we're riding.
So, but I think a person who maybe is naturally a little bit more upright in their body and keeps their upper body more centered, but they maybe are chronically crossing their horses. We ride in snaffle bits and everything here rides in snaffle bits, so this is why it's applicable. But if they're chronically crossing their horse's neck with their reins, and when they go into the bend, then my approach is going to be a lot different. So my approach is going to say, okay, we're going to sit deep in our saddle. We're going to keep our reins on both sides of our horse's neck and keep our horse between our reins and between our legs. We're going to lift our inside rein, apply our inside leg to get the bend. Okay, great. You've got the bend. Now we're going to bring that leg back. Okay, but don't bring the inside rein right, all the way across your horse's, mm-hmm, neck. That rein, your horse has to stay between your reins. So I think that approach is going to be very different depending on what support that rider needs.
Right. And the setup of it all. Mm-hmm. I do hear themes though, like sitting deep in your saddle, mm-hmm, and, you know, sitting back, staying upright and long, right, mm-hmm, in the leg.
Yes.
And I totally agree with the way Shelby answered that, everything she said. And so I want to leave that one there. And so I'm going to take
let
the question.
It linger.
Yeah. And I'm going to twist it a little bit. As a rider, we should also be asking these questions for our horse.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I'm training a horse, it's the same thing. And you have to take it in the psychology of the horse of, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? How am I going to help him to understand?
Mm-hmm.
Because the horses need those same things of, if I just say, you know, we're going to, like, just to use it again, we're going to back an L to my horse. They have no idea why we're backing, what we're doing, what,
yeah,
we're attempting. So you have to take the psychology of the horse of, he's going to be confused by this,
mm-hmm,
because he's not naturally going to do this. He's going to be frustrated. He's probably going to want to do this for this reason.
Mm-hmm.
So to help him, I'm going to do this for this reason. And we're going to get it through it together slowly. So those questions are great questions for our riders. And as riders, we should ask those questions for our horse,
mm-hmm,
to help us communicate that with them. Because it is, communication with our horse is huge. And I had a good mentor trainer once tell me, if you want to ride or train horses, you should go get a psychology degree in a language you don't speak.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is what it is. We're trying,
yeah,
to, we are trying to communicate with them. They also think a completely different way than we do. They're prey animals. They're thinking, run, save me, all the time. And so we have to think how we can translate this and how we can make it work for them with the way they think and how they think in a whole nother language.
Mm-hmm.
So those questions should also be used to help you communicate with your horse.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the why, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm,
that's like, as a rider, what are you doing with your body and how are we doing it? What are we doing? And then why? Why? Because our horse needs this support from us, because,
uh-huh,
our horse is going to be confused if we don't do this.
Right.
You know, that kind of that psychology piece from the horse is the why we do what we do. For sure. All right. Anything else you want to add about the canter or the lope? If you guys would just tell me, canter or lope, what's your preferred word and why?
I say canter. It's just what comes out of my mouth.
Why is there two words for it? It's discipline.
Discipline.
Right?
Yeah. Discipline. So English disciplines use canter more. Western disciplines use lope. I do more in the Western discipline in my personal life, but I've just always said canter. It's like soda and pop for me. I've just always said canter.
It is very just kind of how you,
yeah,
who said it to you first,
exactly,
and how they said it. I
yeah,
say lope because I'm on the versatility ranch side, and
yeah,
you will never hear an 80-year-old cowboy with a cigarette in his mouth say canter. So,
all right. Well, before I for sure let you guys go, we always end our podcast with one question. Season 3, it is. Have you been on the show yet this year? Okay.
Season 3's
question is, if you could give advice to your younger professional self, okay, that's in this industry, you could pick up the phone and call, like, you know, young you, what advice would you give them and why?
Take a leadership course.
Mm.
Take a leadership course. There,
okay,
is so many ways that will benefit you in your personal life and in your professional life, and especially in any part of the horse industry. You are going to come into contact with people who don't know what they're doing, and they think they know more than you. So take a leadership course and figure out how to navigate those things tactfully. Mm-hmm. Because I think the horse industry is a small industry. The EAS industry is even smaller. Mm-hmm. And being able to conduct yourself tactfully and the ability to look at the big picture, the ability to understand things from multiple perspectives, it's something most people lack, unless it's something they have actively tried to better themselves mm-hmm. in. I'll say that forever. Take a leadership course. Better yourself, take a leadership course. Find some way that you can improve your emotional intelligence, your social intelligence, your some sort of communication skills.
Mm. I love that. Okay.
Yeah, especially as a woman in this industry.
Mm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I hate that we have to say it. But I knew this, I've always known this, but there have been times in my professional career where, and as anyone would probably agree, there are moments I was overconfident or mm-hmm. cocky or, you know, thought I knew it all. And I'm constantly reminding myself, always, never stop learning. Mm-hmm. Always educate yourself. Whatever it is, I continue as, I am a trainer, I am established, I have clients all over, but I am taking classes on equine anatomy, on equine dental science, mm-hmm. on anything I can get my hands on with horses, because you can never stop learning. And anytime you think you've learned it all, a horse will come along and teach you a new disease. Or
horses humble you.
Yeah,
horses will always humble you.
Yeah, a new behavioral issue, a new anything like that. So if you continue to learn, and like on the training side, going to clinicians, lessons, anything, whether you, I get a lot of people of, oh, I've heard of this guy, I don't like the way he works. Mm-hmm. Say, well, have you gone and watched? Have you seen him? Have you talked to him? Anything like that? And they'll say, well, no, but I've seen videos online or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I always say, well, even if you go and you hated all of it, then you learned what you don't want to do.
That's exactly. Right.
You learned what to avoid. So you'll always learn something, and you may find one tiny gold nugget in there that you mm-hmm. that has will change the way you think about your horses, or will change mm-hmm. the way you work with your horses.
You change your perspective on something.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. always be open-minded and always be willing to learn and be educated, because none of us know it all. And none of us will ever know it all. And again, if we think we do, a horse will come and hit us in the back of the head and say,
right.
Nice try. So never, ever, ever stop learning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very good. Well, thank you both for taking time out of your busy day to sit down with me. I think this will be a really, really great episode for a lot of people. So if anybody has any questions, any follow-up stuff, I'll leave all that link in the show notes below. And then don't forget about the cantering checklist. If you want access to that, that will also be through our brand new Patreon page. So thank you, gals.
Thanks, Katie.
Thanks for listening to another episode. Until the next one launches, stay connected to our community by joining the Not Just a Pony Ride Facebook group. There, we share exclusive educational content, answer your questions, and review new and exciting developments for the EAS community. Don't forget, if you have suggestions for future episode topics or a lead on a great guest that you think our audience would enjoy, click on the link in the show notes or visit us at hetrauniversity.org. This podcast is presented by Hetra University, an educational arm of the Heartland Equine Therapeutic Riding Academy. Hetra University's mission is to provide high-quality educational offerings to our participants and the EAS community. If you'd like to help us work toward our mission, you can make a donation by visiting us online at hetra.org. Again, I can't thank you all enough for helping Hetra change lives one stride at a time.